You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. My name is Mike Piccinato, and I'm your host for Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, and you are listening today to episode 22. In today's episode, we are going back to our five questions series, a series in which we ask people from different backgrounds the same five questions as the foundation for our conversation, and then just see where the conversation goes from there. My guest today is Shaw Coleman. In 2006, Shaw completed his dance training at the Australian National Theatre Ballet School, and he worked as a soloist in different dance companies throughout Europe. He also got married in 2011 and then worked in Singapore as a dancer, then returned in 2013 to Germany and worked as a dancer, as a choreographer, and as a music theater actor. In 2016, I got the chance to meet Shaw. He came to Berlin to launch a new ministry, a performance arts ministry called the Limelight Collective. It's an outreach ministry for the Salvation Army, and it's just been a privilege to get to know Shaw, and I'm sure that you will enjoy our interview with him today. Shaw, it is great that you can join us today. Over the time that I've gotten a chance to know you in Berlin, you and your wife and your family have become, I would say, close friends of ours, and we really appreciate you and the ministry that you have. Why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us where you're from and why you're here in Berlin.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's nice to be here. Well, originally I'm from Australia. I grew up in, all around Australia, but mostly in Perth, which if you look at a picture of Australia is the bottom left. I trained as a ballet dancer, and there wasn't much work for ballet dancers in Australia when I graduated. So I've spent most of my career then in Europe and also in Asia as a dancer and performer. Yeah, now I'm in Berlin working for the Salvation Army.
We've been doing this series, Shaw, this five question series with people from different backgrounds. And it's super fascinating to me to listen to how people from different walks of life, different backgrounds, different experiences answer the same five questions. Mm. The first question is, what is a significant transition you have experienced?
Well, there have been so many. So it's hard to sort of pinpoint the most significant or the best one. As a child, we moved around a lot for my parents' work. So being mobile, having a lot of transition geographically has always been part of my life. And as an adult, that's not been different. Yeah, moving to different countries is always exciting. But I think one of the most significant transitions that I feel like I'm still in the process is this transition from being a professional performer to being someone in full-time ministry. When I started this transition, it didn't feel like I was not going to be a professional performer anymore. It felt like I was going to do this other thing and sort of keep both things sort of going. And I remember when I was quite fresh in Berlin and I was praying, and God sort of gave me this image of hanging up my shoes, hanging up my ballet shoes. And I'm like, no, that can't be God speaking to me, because I came to Berlin for this idea of bringing performance and art and ministry together. And the longer I'm doing this, the more I see that was actually a gift of God saying, you don't have to worry about being a professional performer anymore, being a professional dancer. You're still a dancer and you're still a performer, and that doesn't change. But you don't have to define yourself by performing at that level. That's not your number one goal in life at the moment, or even in your career, in your professional life. That's not your number one goal anymore. Even though creating art and, you know, producing stuff at what I strive for, a professional level, is still a huge part of my job. So it's a transition that I'm still in, and that I'm kind of navigating from. You know, like any transition, you fly by the seat of your pants a little bit. And there's a little bit of pain involved with that as well.
I'm really glad you chose that transition to talk about, because knowing you, I know that that's been a big challenge that you've been navigating and working through as you've entered into this ministry role. And as Alyssa and I have gotten to know more artists in Berlin over the last 6-7 years, we've really discovered and learned that art is not what people create. And an artist, I don't even know how to say it quite right, but art is what an artist does. It's not this extra thing that they do. Yeah. Like, oh, when I'm done working, I'll go home and create today. It's creativity is just such a core part of.
Yeah, it really becomes a way of experiencing the world and interacting with the world. You know, I see the world, and I think a lot of artists see the world aesthetically, and so that's the way we experience the world. But it's also the way that we have an effect on the world is through creating or through speaking, through articulating stuff in artistic terms. You know, this is our way of dialogue with and interaction with the world is through art.
One of the questions we would often ask before exhibiting a new artist in our old gallery space was, what do you do when you can't create? And when an artist would say, oh, I can't imagine not creating, we would know, okay, this is an artist and this is someone that we're working with. And so as an artist in the performing arts experience this transition where you're coming off of the stage and now you have to reimagine and re-experience, how do I live out this creativity that God has given me in a new realm? I know that's been a challenge for you.
Yeah, and there's been good and bad as well. You know, one of the things being a dancer, being a performer, to a large extent, you're someone else's canvas. You go on stage, especially in the sort of the professional circles I was working in, you go on stage and you have a director or a choreographer who tells you what to do, and you know, at least as an actor, there is a little bit of dialogue where you can say, oh, I don't feel like my character would do that. But as a dancer, it's literally, they say jump, you say how high and in which position. And that was always something that I felt a tension in as a performer, is that I really want to contribute in terms of ideas and thoughts and opinions on this piece that I'm part of, but it's not my place to say. And there had been times, especially when I was younger, where I did state an opinion and sort of got wrapped over the knuckles for it. So that's been one of the positive things about being in a position where I don't have someone telling me what to do. I do have more control over the aesthetic and over the, you know, the concept that I'm able to present. And so that's a lot of fun. There's a lot more ownership. I often, as a dancer, I really struggled calling myself an artist because I felt like, I mean, there's a bit of interpretation, but it's mostly, I'm just someone else's canvas. I'm an artisan, I'm a technician, but I don't have much opportunity to create stuff myself. Nowadays, I feel much more comfortable describing myself as an artist and a bit less comfortable, you know, introducing myself as a dancer. Because I know, you know, physically, in my heart, it's all there. But physically, I am not in the you know, this peak of fitness that I was when I was a professional dancer. So, you know, it's a bit of a way off between, okay, well, I've gained this and I've lost that. Yeah, I don't get to perform as much as I used to, and I don't get to create sort of dance pieces, performances as much as I might like to. But it becomes a bit of a case of allowing myself to build in opportunities for creativity into my daily rhythms. So, and that tends to happen quite intuitively, and sometimes I kick myself for it because it feels like I'm not being focused. You know, I should be, you know, I should be doing real work and instead my soul just, hey, I just need to move and dance, or I just need to carve something or draw something, or, you know, conceptualize some creation. And I feel like that's, you know, part of the daily, weekly rhythm that, yeah, my soul knows when I need that. And it just happens. Maybe I need to give myself a bit more grace for being like, no, that's part of who you are. That's part of your job. That's part of your way of interacting with the world. And that's okay.
I mean, I really appreciate that you said that. I think that another thing that we've learned working with artists is that the church often has become very logic focused and word based in the way it understands and expresses belief, to the detriment of a more holistic approach that also includes emotions and the body and movement and creativity. And so just us even learning at Envision Berlin and wanting to do that with people we partner with, like Limelight Collective, and as artists come, just trying to figure out how do we create space for them that doesn't make them feel like I'm not getting stuff done.
Yeah.
But where their expressions of faith in that very artist and creative way is also valued and adds value
right
to who we are as an organization.
Right. Yeah.
And I like how you're doing that in the community you guys are creating as well.
Yeah. Trying.
It's hard because it's not the way people measure productivity.
Right.
And so when you're writing or talking with supporters or when you're reporting to the people you need to report to, dances that you've composed in your head or, know, or actually choreographed or the times you've taken to carve something aren't things that normally show up on as measurable in reports.
Right.
But the health of the soul of the minister is then reflected through the ministry that they produce. And if your soul is becoming unhealthy, then your ministry has less fruit. And
right.
so finding that way to care for yourself is...
Yeah.
And the heart of an artist in doing that is a challenge, but super important.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, I also have to say, I'm making this up as I go along. I'm trying to work out what it means to...
So are we.
Yeah, so is everyone, right? Yeah, like that's what adulting is.
Well, especially in a different type of ministry.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of books for how it's done.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew how to be a dancer. I knew, you know, are in the studio at 10 a.m. every day and you do your training and then you do rehearsal and then you have a break and then you have a show at night and then rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
So moving into full-time ministry where I don't have a ballet master or a choreographer telling me what to do every day. I don't have someone else arranging my schedule. And yeah, there's freedom, which is great, but there's also freedom, which is dangerous and scary. Yeah. Like you said, work out what's important. And how much time goes to what. And it's...
And I'm on the other side of the equation. I love to tell people how to organize their schedule and what they should do. So finding the freedom to give the artists room to do things that I can't measure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I really love about our ministry at the Limelight Collective is a program we do called Soul Space. And we take a whole evening. We read a text from the Bible, and then we take an hour, at least an hour, that everyone goes and just creates something. And it's an empty hour, so we don't tell everyone, okay, you have to create this, or you have to fill out this workbook or do this thing. We just say you have an hour to meet with God, and there is some material if that helps you. And so. Some people will paint, some people will dance, some people will write, some people will knit, and some people will just sit there and ponder.
You've had people code, you've had people...
Code little websites, all sorts of things. And I like the discipline of, okay, this is time to waste with God. And if you come up with something by the end of it, and you want to share that with the group, and we can talk about it, and talk about what we've experienced, that's great. And if you haven't, that's great too, but it's this idea of time to waste with God. And I think there's something about art that it's the luxury, maybe the luxury of wasted time that makes it so beautiful.
When I was attending Soul Space, it doesn't fit really well into my weekly rhythms right now, but if the pressure came on me that at the end of this time, I need to show something that I've produced, then that production pressure for me robbed the joy of creating and spending time with God. And so the value of, I'm spending an hour with God and asking the Spirit to give me a new insight into this text that I could perhaps express creatively, I think is such a valuable gift to people.
And it what I like about it is it counters this sort of modern Western narrative of being productive, being efficient, you know, justifying my existence with productivity. You know, I think that's something that we've all been trained in since we were children, since primary school. You know, you have to do your homework, you have to, and in a sense that's important for the world to function. But I feel like, and I This is not something I've found a good way of articulating, and it's just sort of a bit of an inkling within me that it's more healthy and more biblical to see our value in being rather than doing,
mm-hmm.
and in growth rather than producing. You know, humans are not valuable because we are consumers or workers, but we're valuable because we are created by God and bearers of His image.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to do anything to do that, to be that. You know, so you can be a high flying businessman, you can be a cleaning lady, you can be a disabled person who can't really move or eat independently. But your life is valuable because you carry the image of God. And I think that's something that this sort of building in time of not being productive can help to teach us. I mean, this is one of the things about Sabbath, right?
Mm.
This is why in the Judeo-Christian weekly rhythm, Sabbath is something that has always been important, because we need to be reminded every week that we are not defined by our output, but by our relationship with God.
So moving on in our questions, what's one of the most important risks you have taken and why?
I think in my career, one of the most important risks has been coming to Europe, you know, graduating from college and coming to Europe. I didn't have much money. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a job to come to. I just sort of got on a plane and traveled around on the train, and I would walk from the train station to the youth hostel and then to the opera house and then back and have an audition and then go to the next city. And it was a great adventure. I remember I'd been doing this for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, sleeping somewhere different every night and going and doing an audition, not hearing back. And you know, there's only so many places you can audition and get a letdown before you're like, oh, is anything ever going to happen?
Mm.
And I remember I got a reply from one theater. I was in Berlin, staying in Berlin, and I got a reply from one theater in Detmold, which is the sort of the middle of Germany. And they said, "Can you come tomorrow?" And I said, "Yes." It was already the evening, so I'm like, "All right, I'll go to bed early. I'll wake up early and get on a train and head there." And so I woke up in the, you know, the middle of the night, got on my train, headed over halfway through the country to Detmold, and I had to change trains. And it was probably about 7 a.m. I was changing trains at a city called, I say city, at a train station called Altenbeken. And this was a train station in the middle of nowhere. I don't even know if there's a town there. Like, I was just in this train station, and there was forest all around me and mountains and hardly any people. And like, I was just in the middle of Germany. I had my backpack on my back. I was like, "Sure, what are you doing? You are here in this foreign country. You don't speak the language. You have hardly any money in your account. Everything you own on this hemisphere is in your backpack. Like, you're in the middle of nowhere. Like, what is going on?" And it was one of those moments where I really appreciated the fact that God is everywhere. And this sounds really flat when I describe it, but it was one of these sort of really deep revelations for me that if I didn't have God with me, I would be so lost. I would be no one, nowhere.
Mm.
But I had God with me, which meant that I was on a plan, I was on a path, I was being led, I was being accompanied, and I was being protected. And then I got to Detmold, and I ended up getting offered a job there. So I guess that was one of the things I assume that God wanted to teach me is, yeah, this is something that I needed to learn. Yeah, and I think that risk was really important to take in terms of my career and the trajectory of my life, the geography of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Since I've been 21, I've spent almost all of my life in Europe. A year and a half I was in Asia, and I still have I have friends in Australia who are like, "Ah, sure, you're still living overseas." as if overseas was this, you know, skip.
I mean, Australia is an island, so overseas is everywhere. Australia.
Yeah, yeah. There are two categories of countries: Australia and overseas. And I'm like, well, yes, this is where I live. I'm not at home in Australia anymore. I'm at home in Germany now. So this had a huge effect on the trajectory of my life. I'm not sure if that's the biggest risk I ever took. I want to say,
but that was an important.
That was important risk. Yeah. Another important risk was getting married. I think that's an important, like a huge risk for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally worth it. I mean, mm-hmm. the longer I'm married, the more I'm glad I am.
You know, they say often that opposites attract. And I think in both of our cases, we have married women who complement us well.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
Just kind of round out make us more whole.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But you're right, that is a risk.
It is a risk.
Shaw, one of the things we've been doing together now for the better part of 2021 is this morning prayer service, this Matins liturgical prayer service, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And even as you were talking about this journey, this risk that you took, I remember one that came several weeks ago where our text was out of Psalm 119. Your word is a light unto my feet and a lamp unto my path. Mm-hmm. And the reading on that day talked about how the light, the brightness of the light, is only really on the steps that we can see. Mm. And the lamp down the path is often not entirely clear enough to maybe show us general direction, but not always to give us enough clarity that makes our decisions 100% sure, yeah, and certain. And yeah, so when you're talking about this risk and you're standing at a train station, I thought on this, on this light lamp thing, like, yeah, okay, I sense that God is calling me here, but where is this going?
Yeah.
This is crazy, yeah, but God, you're here.
Yeah. Yeah. I was touring with the musical Dirty Dancing around Germany and German-speaking Europe in 2014. And in one of the locations, I can't even remember where it was, Vienna, maybe, Zurich, no idea. But we had behind the stage, you'd have to go behind the stage to go from one side of the stage to the other. And there was no light there. And so the technicians had stuck a stick of glow-in-the-dark or a stripe of glow-in-the-dark tape along the way that you had to walk so that you could find your way. And at the beginning of the show, you could see the whole thing and you're, all right, that's my path. But towards the end of the show, when it had been dark for a while, you could only see a couple of steps in front of you. And you only needed to see a couple of steps in front of you if you were careful, unless you were in a hurry. But you just needed to see, all right, there's the path. And then you could just follow that. And you knew that would take you where you're going. And so much of my life since then has felt a lot like this. Even my entry into ministry and the way that we've been running our ministry. You know, I think even from my leadership with the Salvation Army, often there's been... you know, someone said, okay, well, we need all people in the team. Okay, we need a strategy. We need a vision. We need to know where we're going and like break down how we're going to get there. And I think for a lot of people, that's a very important way of setting goals and breaking them down and working out how we're going to get there. It's a super process, but that just hasn't been possible because I don't know where we're going. Mm. I only know what the next steps are. You know, I don't know where the path is. I only know where the next steps are. And so when I mentioned earlier that a lot of my life and a lot of this transition from being a professional performer to being in full-time ministry with this artistic focus, you know, this has been my lived experience that I said flying by the seat of my pants, which probably a better term is taking it one step at a time because I can only see a few feet in front of me.
Well, and I think even from somebody who loves making long-term plans, the last couple of years, especially with COVID,
yes,
has so blown that up. And yeah, I think it's teaching all of us, do what you can in the time that you can with the limitations that you can.
Yeah.
And when things change, go take the next steps.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and that's a super uncomfortable place for me.
Yeah.
But it's also been good to be able to step back and say, as we do evaluations, you know, once a quarter or however often we do those here, one of the things that we repeat kind of as a mantra is everybody was doing the best that they could with the resources that they had and what they knew at that time.
Yeah.
So trying to live in that grace, yeah, is also...
I really like that phrase, especially as a, you know, when you're leading a team or part of a team, if you lose sight of that, I think it's very easy to get into conflict, unnecessary conflict. Well, why didn't you do this? Or you should have known, or mm-hmm. isn't it obvious to you? I like that. I might steal that.
Please do. I can send you the whole phrase too.
Thanks.
Well, that brings our episode today to a close. We will come back to Shaw again next week for the answers to questions 3, 4, and 5 in our 5-question series. I did send that retrospective prime directive to Shaw. I'll just read it for you here, and you can find it also in the show notes. And I just find it super important when you're evaluating things to remember that regardless of what we discover, we understand and truly believe that everyone did the best job they could given what they knew at the time, their skills and abilities, the resources available, and the situation at hand. If you'd like to contact us, you can find our email address in the show notes. It's just podcast@envisionberlin.com. You can also find a link to our Discord server where you can join in conversations about this week's episode and other episodes and other topics as well.
Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Picanato.